First up, we're going in big. We're pulling out the big guns. He is Billy Russo in The Punisher. He was in The Chronicles of Narnia, Westworld. He's in the movies Killing Bono, Seventh Son, and Easy Virtue. And now, he's in what I genuinely believe will be one of the biggest shows Netflix has ever had. Not just for this season, but I'm convinced this is going to roll on and on and on. It's the incredible Shadow and Bone. And one of the main characters in Shadow and Bone is Ben Barnes. Top man. Fantastic chat. Here he is.
The Andy J Podcast.
Hey, now I can see you as well. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Do you know what? Now I can see you. I just want to yell Russo at you.
Do you know what? People do it in the street sometimes. I'll be walking along, coming out the supermarket, and I think it's because people love to do impressions of John Bernthal's growl. I'll be walking down the street. I also get a lot of just messages on Twitter or comments on Instagram pictures that just say Russo with about 16 O's. And I think just like to shout, maybe.
And obviously, your natural reaction when they do that in the street is just to kill them, presumably.
Instantly.
Yeah, good. Right. Listen, welcome to the show, man. I'm thrilled to be chatting to you. So, Shadow and Bone, holy moly, Ben. I'm blown away. It's not often you get to watch a show and go, this is going to be massive. And that is exactly what's happened here. I got access to it last night. I'm now seven deep. I cannot get enough of it. It's amazing.
You watched number seven or you've yet to watch seven?
I've got 10 minutes left of number seven.
It's pretty exciting, actually. I actually messaged our showrunner, who's just the head of the team of writers, and said, such an anticipation about this coming out. I'm really excited about it. And, I've been doing kind of fancy things and sort of bigger movies for a while now. I've done lots of sort of literary adaptations. And it wasn't even that I knew these books before. We started shooting the show, and in some instances of the shows that I've done, I had read the books before, and so I was sort of part of that fandom of people that had that fervor for where is the show, give us the show of this story. But in this instance, I haven't been able to sort of join in that kind of mania until I'd actually been introduced to the books. But I am really excited that it feels like a show that isn't on TV already.
Right.
That's what it's like about it.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Look, I don't want to spoil it. It's not my place to do that. However, I would love you to unfold it for me so that the audience understand it's called Shadow and Bone. It's out now on Netflix. And if people haven't been aware of it yet, my goodness, they're in for some fun.
Yeah, I think what I love about it is that its genre is not traditional fantasy all the way through. It has things about it which feel nostalgic in terms of there's this sort of chosen one narrative. The lead character's name is Alina Stark. Obviously, she's a young map maker in the army. She's come from an orphanage, and then we find out in the very first episode that she has the power to summon sunlight. And this is in a world where the Grisha, who are the sort of magical core of the universe, have powers to manipulate different elements or the blood within your body, or in the case of my character General Kerrigan, who's the head of the magical army, he's the only person who has the power to summon shadows in the darkness. And I just love that it's sort of mixed together with a broader set of books in the same universe, which has a more like Ocean's 11 Peaky Blinders kind of feel to it. And you think that these things don't really go together, but they do feel part of this really cool kind of Russian aesthetic set universe. So they call it Tsar Punk, which is like, I guess, like steampunk, but with it. And there is a Tsar in the universe as well. There's a king. And so it's a very sort of detailed, dense universe with lots of different characters, but it's also very quickly accessible. I think you very quickly understand the landscape that you're in, and you understand people's people's kind of plights, and you understand why you are rooting for certain characters and booing other ones.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, for people that don't know, it's based on the Grishaverse books by Leigh Bardugo. I wasn't familiar with those at all. I now feel like I need to go and search them out. In fact, the only thing I have done with regards to them since being aware of the show, Ben, is I have searched how many there are, because I urgently, about three episodes in, I was like, OK, this is an 8-episode season one. I'm so hooked. 8 episodes is not going to be enough. So I check how many books this guy's done. A bit like the Game of Thrones thing, you know? People, as soon as Game of Thrones, people were kind of going, how many are there? Because, you know, there's got to be more.
How many seasons of this will I get? Because I can't bear the thought of only having 2 seasons of television.
Yeah, well, so there's at least 6 books and more on the way, which makes me believe that this is going to keep going and keep going and keep going. You may have some knowledge that you're not allowed to share with me, so maybe you could just nod. But, but please tell me this gets to at least a second season.
Well, there's, the 7th book, actually, I think just came out this week. But they are very sort of diverse. They're roving. They don't necessarily stay with one linear storyline. And the way they're written, they're also written like one chapter from the perspective of each character. The Shadowbone trilogy is all from Alina's perspective. But the others kind of, you get to see the world through other characters' eyes, which I think is really useful, obviously, for the actors. We don't know yet about whether there's going to be a second season, but I do know that there's plenty to draw from if we do move forward, and I hope that we do, because I'd be excited to see where they take it. Because the unique thing about the show is that, as I said, it sort of mixes together the original trilogy with the other books, and so there's opportunities for characters to meet in the show that might never meet on the pages of the books, and I think that whilst that's probably frustrating for some of the literary purists who love the books more than anything, I think it's exciting because it keeps even them on their toes when they're watching it.
I can't see anything other than people being absolutely elated with this show. It's huge. As I've mentioned, there's 8 episodes in season one. It's the equivalent of sort of 4 feature films. How long did it take to film? It looks like, because the universe is titanic. You filmed it mostly in Hungary, is that right?
Yes, we filmed it almost all in and around Budapest. And we did about 6 months of filming, but obviously crew members hard at work for months before that, building sets and costumes and sort of preparing the world so that these sort of young actors could walk off the pages of the books. And that was actually one of the first things that I noticed when I turned up in Budapest and met the cast outside a restaurant on a cobbled street in Budapest. And I knew immediately who was playing each character, having just finished the 4th book when I arrived. I knew exactly who each character was. It was literally like they'd walked off the pages. They even seemed to dress a bit like them, even though they weren't in costume. I thought this is so perfect. This is definitely gonna appease the fervorous hordes of book fans in terms of the casting, at least. And then just sort of walking onto the sets of like the military camp, I think was one of the first sets we saw, with all these Grisha tents in this field and a huge, rather imposing green screen representing the fold, the shadow fold, which is the dark, scary place, ripping through the center of the country. Even though I've been having those kind of experiences since my Narnia days, which was sort of 15 years ago, I still remember walking onto the set of the castle, the Caer Paravel castle in Narnia, and not really being able to breathe properly, thinking how many people did it take and how long to put this together brick by brick. And then you realize it isn't bricks at all. It's set wizardry and smoke and mirrors a little bit. Some of this stuff is still extraordinary, and it still kind of takes my breath away. The effort and the passion and the skill that it takes to kind of build these worlds, and then we put on a costume and walk onto the set and, you know, say lines that someone else has written.
Well, does that add to the pressure and responsibility for you? Because you're aware you have such a crucial role. You're a massive part of this show, and you get some of the greatest scenes. Obviously, because I knew we were chatting, I was focusing a lot on your character. Many times I was like, lucky so-and-so, I bet this is amazing to do this scene. But did you feel kind of pressure because of this world that's built around you and the number of people involved and the money spent?
I think I think that I felt that very, very intently when I played Prince Caspian. I think I felt that. I felt these cameras are pointed at me. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm looking at this tiny stick with a tennis ball stuck on the end of it, and I'm supposed to pretend that it's a talking badger. And I don't know how to do this. And I don't know how to do this and satisfy the people who are going to be up in arms about it because they've loved these books for, you know, 50 years. Now, down the line a little bit, I tell you, it helped playing a character who was the highest status, the most powerful character in the universe. I hadn't done that much of this before. My friends, you know, kind of joked that I played boy with sword for the first, you know, decade. A career in terms of, it was, and sometimes it was boy with gun or you know, boy in car, but it was basically, you know, our shorthand for, you know, the guy who's trying to win the girl and trying to defeat the monster and the baddie and trying to get to the end alive. And I think playing, you know, slightly characters who are a little bit more in the gray the last few years, and certainly with this character, playing a character who, you know, they say that you don't play the king, that other people play it for you, you know, in terms of how they treat you.
Right.
And so I think there was a little bit of that walking onto this set. There was a bit of deference from people, actually, a little bit of, you know, maybe the room gets a bit quieter when you walk into it because that's who your character is. And I think that everyone had loved the book so much and everyone was so invested in these characters that everyone started to treat each other a little bit how you might treat these characters. And, you know, it's one of the most wonderful things about shooting it, actually, that all of the actors who came in, even if their characters weren't in the books or even if they were just there with a few lines, most of them had read at least one of the books.
Oh, cool.
Just to get a feel of the universe. And so we would be able to sort of geek out with them and include them in what we were doing because they were so excited about the portrayal of this world on the screen. And so you get this great kind of community of passion.
Oh, I love it. Now, there are several moments, particularly with several of your scenes, which are really very tense. I mean, they're quite frightening, they're quite shocking, but also as an actor, you know, you have to have one-on-ones with individuals and so, which are really quite dark. You know, some of the moments are a bit frightening. Did you have moments kind of off camera to kind of ease things up? I'm hoping that you busted out a couple of high-rise hits. Am I right? Did you, bit of getting the boy band going?
You stinker. you know, I do love that, you know, delving into the kind of like humanity of the characters and having those kind of like one-on-one scenes, you know, the ones with Jesse who plays Alina, where we're trying to sort of navigate this budding relationship between the two of them potentially, but also this sort of, like, as you say, like darker, like manipulation. And then there's the sort of more muscular tension with Archie Renault's character who plays Mal, with this sort of, the sort of chin-up standoffs that men like to have with each other, sort of roughing stags a little bit, and so those things were really fun. But you're right; sometimes you need to shake out the silly a little bit in between.
Yeah,
I think because otherwise, you know, it's difficult to kind of like, you know, you have to drone out a little bit so that you can sort of then focus back in when you're doing the scene and really commit to being in it. I remember on the Little Palace, in the Little Palace set, there was a piano in the back, in one of the back rooms. Because
nice.
Actually, they weren't sets. The Little Palace, the rooms inside the Little Palace that you see in the show are rooms inside that building. Very often they're sort of built on a soundstage somewhere. But actually, these rooms were dressed, but they were real rooms. So we could sort of walk down those corridors and marble corridors with the paintings on the walls that you would never see in the show, and through to the sort of like green rooms where you would wait, and there was a piano in one of the green rooms. So I definitely found myself like navigating towards that in between takes, just sort of, you know, bust out some Daniel Caesar on the piano and have everyone have a sing along, you know.
Brilliant. And of course you play drums as well, which makes me like you instantly, because any drummer's a good guy in my book, because I'm an ex-session drummer
myself.
Used to be a session drummer.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun, isn't it?
Which means you're better than me. But my first ever job I ever had was when I was 15. I played the drums in a West End production of Bugsy Malone. That was the first thing anyone ever paid me to do, and I've never felt cooler than, you know, I think I was doing my mock GCSEs or something, and halfway through a lesson on a Wednesday when we had the matinee, halfway through a lesson at school, I would just stand up and say, you know, so I've got to go, and, you know, pick up my bag of sticks and get the train into London to be a jazz drummer. I was I have never felt cooler than that moment, I don't think.
I'm not surprised. That's a massive thing to be able to drop. That's being a drummer is very cool. I tell you what else is very cool. Operating opposite national treasure Zoe Wanamaker. I mean, and you've got some blinding scenes with her. What was she like to work with?
She's such a delight. That sort of those piercing eyes and that raspy voice that nobody else can do. But she's so naughty and so much fun. Like the scenes with her are such a joy. I mean, talk about somebody who's able to sort of just switch off and focus on exactly what she's doing, and then back to, you know, utter just zany Zoe in between everything. And she's just like a delightful human being. But I was so thrilled when I finally saw the show that you can see that she's done her homework in terms of when you first see her, it's a little bit reminiscent of when you first see me, not to give anything more than that away.
Nice.
But it was quite a delight to see her sort of relishing that.
You sound so invested in this world, Ben. It's not just a show. You've put yourself in the universe by the sound of things.
I think it's also the younger actors, you know, in the show. I remember this experience for myself, and their passion and their knowledge about the world, and not just to do with their own characters, is just second to nothing I've ever been involved in. And it's really infectious. And I just want it to be such a success for them as well. I really want them to be rewarded for all of their kind of like everything that they've invested in their characters and in bringing the show to life. You know, we talked about the books when we arrived in Budapest. We talked about the scripts while we were filming, and we talk about the show now that we've finished and now that we've watched the show. And we have group chats on WhatsApp, and we're still geeking out about, you know, moments from book to script to TV.
I bet. I mean, you must have heard from enough people like me that have seen enough episodes of the show, reviewers, etc., to know that it's passed the litmus test, hands down. It's clearly a great show. I mean, you've seen it yourself, but you're too close to know for sure. You must hear from neutrals like me that it is that good. So it feels a slam dunk to me. This is clearly going to roll on and on.
That's really nice. It is really nice here, because you are never sure. And still, when you say that, well, I think, well, nobody else might like it, but at least, you know, at least when we were chatting with Andy on the radio, at least when I was talking with those people on, you know, doing those interviews, they liked it. They said episode 7 was their favourite or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. The thing is, I'm in this situation now where I've got an episode and a little bit to go. So I don't know if there is a season 2, which I assume there must be. I don't know if your character's going to make it or not. I don't know if you'll survive or not. And I know you can't tell me, but I'm so intrigued on that level as well.
I would say, by virtue of how he's behaved in the first season, I would say of all the characters, I'm the least likely to make it to a season 2.
But, you know, in these fantasy dramas, anything can happen. There's plenty of ways to come back.
Beyond true.
Oh, I'm excited.
So true.
I'm genuinely, it's ridiculous. I feel like a school kid. You know, I'm an old man. I've got a minute.
I really want to do this interview again tomorrow when you've watched episode 8 as well, to see how you feel.
Yeah,
well, but I will say one of the things that made me want to do the show, I had a meal with our showrunner, Eric, and he pitched me the very last shot of the season, the first season. And I went, and I remember I just went, like that. And it was definitely one of the kind of draws to want to be involved, for sure.
I can't wait to see what it
is. So hopefully that whets your appetite a little bit more even.
As if it needs it. I need to watch it now. But brilliant. Ben, what a pleasure. The show's incredible. And I'm sure you've got loads more lined up. Is there anything you can tell us about that's next for you? I know we've got no time now.
Well, obviously, it's been a very strange year. So I'm hoping more than anything, actually. I'm hoping to be able to, you know, go back and do some more of this. But I've been working away on my own projects during lockdown. I think, like everybody else, my own creative endeavors, hoping to rewrite a little bit of the high rise. I don't even know what to call it. Certainly not a legacy, but the high rise part, my high rise past, which haunts me. I'm hoping to rewrite a little bit of that at some point soon with some songs of my own.
Great. Excellent. So we're going to get new music and this massive new series. That's pretty brilliant. If you need a drummer, you don't, because you can do it. But if you fancy a drummer to just be behind you, give me a yell.
You're hired.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. I'll hold you to that. Ben, what a pleasure. Thank you so much and congratulations again.
Thank you. The Andy J Podcast.